sounds good then. Awesome. So, how are you?
I'm good. I was laughing just before I got on the call because about 5-10 minutes before any call, I start to pace. And I check my computer, and I pace a little bit more, and I walk around the house, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm starting to get nervous. Doesn't matter who it is.
How?
And then
how
I'm thinking,
can you get nervous?
I'm thinking, poor Tanya at the other end must be just, like, in knots.
I'm always in knots. And when, like, the thought, I've been, like, thinking about this all week, and I'm going, I can't believe I'm going to do this on Friday. Am I stupid or what?
So. You talk to Brogan. You can talk to anyone after that.
Oh, my God. That was horrible. That was
really? Ugh. He's so nice,
not,
boy.
No. I mean, the experience was absolutely wonderful. but the getting there part was horrific. So it was...
It's one of those things that you either get used to because you've gotten so much practice and you've realized it's not a big deal, or it's one of those things that you just take that on as a little bit of crazy that you keep with you forever, and you will always feel that way. And you just learn to deal.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to be the latter of the two then.
So speaking is not my thing. To let you know, I apparently do really good interviews. Apparently I do good phone, so that's awesome. And as I talk along, you'll notice when I start to run out of steam and I have nothing left to say and all kinds of... Yeah, and then just throw another question at me and I should be fine.
Okay, that sounds good. Interview tips are always good, especially if you don't have any experience. I'm like, I don't know, I guess I'm going to sit here like whatever, Walter Cronkite, and be like, okay, so what was your copy like? And
You just toss out questions as you feel, and you can sneak in the ones that you've written down when it's appropriate and just make it the most natural conversation ever.
Okay. I hope so. And first of all, you said something that was like completely, like you said, you give good interviews, but I mean, I'd like to know what you don't do well. That's what I'm interested in, what you don't do well.
I'm not the best cook. I'm a very relaxed parent. I don't make my bed. How's that?
Awesome. We're good to go then. You are human. And that was the first thing that I was like, when I saw something, it was something similar in the forum of the Damn Fine Words course. And I was like, oh, she's human. Look at that.
It's funny, because I get emails all the time. People are like, oh, my God, I'm so intimidated by you. And I'm like, what? I'm just like you, you know?
But you're not. You're so not. I mean, you say you are, and you can try and claim that if you like. But, I mean, James Chartrand is like, I don't know what, I can't even compare anything to that. It's like everybody wants to be like you online because your writing is...
Thank you. I will so take that. It still sounds good after years and years.
See, it's been listening to it. You've been listening to it for years and it's like it still hasn't sunk in. But it's I don't know how your copy got to be what it is. I mean, because I know you have a psychology background.
I do.
You know, you're a psycho and it shows in your writing. So I mean, if you didn't have that psychological studies in your background, where would you be without it?
You know what? I value my background. At the time, I had wanted to become a psychologist, and, you know, who doesn't these days? And I took the training. When I started to get into writing, though, I realized, oh, my God, how much of this applies to the written word and how you reach people and how you get in touch with them and how you understand what they need. It's just been invaluable to have that knowledge. And I like to keep up with, as much psychology as I can. I read books about sales psychology and consumer psychology, and I'll buy textbooks just for the hell of it because they're just so interesting. You can do so much with that. I wouldn't trade that for any other skill in the world.
Psychology is really super fascinating, and it was something that, you know, you just kind of marvel at when you're in college, but you don't ever think that you're actually going to use it, and here you go.
Yeah. You've seen a lot of it yourself in Damn Fine Words. Like, most of the initial lessons are all about writing psychology, where you write, how you write, what you think when you write, and these lessons are just crucial ones because I get so many people coming back saying, oh, my God, you've changed my life. You've changed the way I write forever. And it's like, fantastic. Well done, you. So it's not just about learning the skills of writing. It's not just about practicing until your pen is broken in your hand. It's a lot of it is about how you think and the way you think. And once you figure that stuff out and start to apply it to your work, it really changes everything.
And that is absolutely where we were, like, yesterday. I think we had a conversation about the word when in the
yes.
copy, and you had mentioned, like, would to, and switching would to, or would you instead of could you, and that kind of thing. And that works amazingly, too. But it's like that one word, when you threw in, like, actually, I think what it was you threw in then, and it was like all of a sudden the ideal reader just, like, what I was supposed to do, the thought pattern. I mean,
yeah.
we had done the exercise about creating the ideal reader, but it was like, okay, here's your exercise. This is what you're supposed to do. But putting the word then and how you did it, like, sort of put it in
a whole new light, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, oh, yeah, it's a step process. It's like you make your ideal reader, then you have to think about that reader while you're writing your copy, not just make it and then go on. So,
I do that myself. Yeah, I do that myself when I write. If I'm writing for client work, you know, or writing some web copy for a specific target market, you try and fix that person in your mind, and you're always writing to that person. And it's very careful, very important to be careful about the language that you choose when you speak to that person, because you want to use the words that they connect with and the words that help them to take action, the words that help them to believe in you and what you do and what you're saying. You know, even though they're just reading something and they don't know you and you don't know them, it's still important to have that connection and to build it.
Yeah, that with the right words, you can really build the bond that makes them, that pushes them to do what you want to do. Now we
got to
use those words. And your brand is very straightforward and like, this is who I am and this is, you know, this is what I can do for you. And it's very authoritative. It's very powerful. And it's actually like the polar opposite of a lot of the female brands out there. I'm not going to mention any names here, but I mentioned them to you yesterday. But, you know, you haven't followed the pattern of the brazen woman and the foul mouth and whatever out there. And how do you feel about those brands? Not about those brands specifically, but about that type of branding.
You know, it's very important for me, and I knew this going into this whole crazy thing, it's very important for me to be able to be myself at all times, regardless of whatever name I choose for which gender I am being at the moment. But, you know, I have to be able to sustain a certain mindset. I have to be able to write copy that sounds like me so that when clients interact with me, they don't feel any disconnect. Who I am mm-hmm. on my website is who I am to deal with for my customers, in my course. You know, I try to be myself as much as possible. And anyone listening is going to say, well, yes, I'm not using any fluffy language. I'm just speaking very straightforwardly, very naturally. And I don't see the need for myself to be anyone different than who I am. And that way it helps me maintain consistency over the years. I'm sure that in 10 years you'll look back on my writing and it'll still look the same then, now, as it did in the past. It will always be the same because that's who I am. And to me, that is what is important in writing when you're trying to brand yourself, is to create that cohesive experience.
And how would you describe the Men with Pens brand, Men with Pens brand?
Good question. I'd say definitely bold, definitely straightforward, authoritative, very confident, a little touch of swagger, little touch of humor. I like to have fun with the words that I write. I like the ability to have a casual brand so that I don't feel like I'm mentally dressing myself up in some kind of power suit. I don't like anything swishy. You know, I just like it to be plain, easy, natural, confident. I think that's the best sum of what I try to convey with my brand at all times.
I would put hard ass in there. I'm sorry. I'm talking about foul language, and then I went and said it. But, I mean, you are very, like, you got to do this. It's got to be done this, you know, this way, but you know what I mean. It's like the authority.
If I could choose if I could choose somebody who I'd love to be if I couldn't be myself, I would love to be Gordon Ramsay, you know, who comes along.
Oh, really?
And who says, you know, what is the matter with you? Don't do it like this. Do it like this because it works. I'd be much gentler than he is, but, you know, that kind of straightforward language and tell it like it is very important to me.
Now, are you like that with your clients also?
Yeah. Yeah, for
this
sure.
This is the way it works, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. There's a level of diplomacy, and you have to be, you know, you have to be kind to your clients, and you want them to like you, and you want to like them. So we build a good relationship with each other. But if somebody suggests something for their website or their copy that I know is not going to work or that I know is wrong, I will say so, and I will explain why I feel that way, and I will give them options and let them make the final decision, but I will be straightforward about that. I'm not going to do something that I know is not the best direction for these people to take.
That's a good way to be too, because I had somebody was questioning like the copy that I had sent for them, and they were like, you know, I don't know if I like this, but because I used the word nothing, and they were like, in the beginning of the sentence, and they were like, no, you know, I don't want to use the word nothing because that's like negative and whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, that makes sense. If that's what you want, that's fine. But you can't start it this way, because they were insisting that you start it like with if the word, with the word if. And I'm like, for me, if is a wishy-washy word, and it like implies, you know, weakness. And I was like,
exactly.
Trying to,
you know,
figure out a way to let them see, you know, we can't do that in this particular part. So.
Yeah, that's the thing. When people understand why you suggest something or why you don't want to do something or why you are proposing something or why you used certain words, this why matters. And I think a lot of people don't bother to explain that, especially, you know, in a copywriting client situation. A lot of copywriters tend to be very uppity about their work, or they're the complete opposite. They do anything that the client says. Neither situation are good. It's good and it's important to explain why you're doing something. And they can agree and they can not agree, but at least they're informed and they're taking the decision for themselves as opposed to you taking the decision for them.
That's true. Once they know why, it makes a huge difference. And,
yeah.
I kind of want to switch gears a little bit here because
you switch all you need.
I wanted to go back to your part about, you know, you don't cook or whatever, and you don't make your bed. Whatever. Do you ever catch yourself thinking about the house stuff when you're trying to write your client copy, and when you're trying to work on projects?
Yes and no. It's very, very easy for me to fall into a writing zone where I'm doing something specific, I'm working on something specific, and if I'm on a roll and it's going well, you know, everything else doesn't matter. It'll get done when it gets done. It's not important to me to have a spotless house. My kids are fine. My spouse is fine. You know, nobody's going to die over this. If we don't have money to eat, yes, people may die.
Yes. That could be a problem.
So I do have priorities about what I'm doing, but I'm also very, very conscious of keeping a work-life balance. So if I ever feel like I'm getting stressed because supper time is approaching and I know that the little one's going to be hungry, it's time to stop working. It's time to take care of life for a little bit. If I ever find that I'm not doing the best work because I'm tired, I've been working for a long time that day, it's time to stop. I'll come back to it later when I'm feeling more refreshed. I make sure that there are clear delineations between house life and work life, and the two never mix.
That's awesome, and I think it's really important to have clear definition for that with your housemates, either your husband or your children or whatever, as long as everybody understands that, you know, things are coming along and they will get done when they get done. You know, I think that helps because, to me, a support system has been like invaluable. I mean, I catch myself thinking about those things, you know, while I'm trying to work on a project. And if I have to, I'll have to get up and move to the other end of the house. But I really wasn't sure how, you know, how James would approach something like that, because being the female, and I know that Sean Platt says that it's not about gender, it's about role. And that could be true, but in my house, you know, this is the way we work. And, you know, if I were making more money, then, you know, that would be a different situation. But my husband makes more money, so it means that the house is my responsibility.
It's the same thing. Like, my spouse works outside the house, so part of taking care of the house falls to me because I am at home, and that's fine. But, you know, we have clear boundaries, and it's very clear that when I'm doing something important, I'm not to be bothered. If something has to be written soon, I'm not to be bothered. And everybody is very respectful of that. But I have to say it wasn't always that way, because once upon a time I did this by myself with two kids with no support system at all, at all, at all.
I was reading your story last night about that. How did you do that?
Long, long hours. It was very difficult. And, you know, you just rely on what you can do. You do the best that you can with the resources that you have at the time. And you know, if it means staying up a little bit later, well, you do. Or if it means, you know, plugging in a video and feeling guilty because your kid is watching too much TV, well, that's what it takes. And life balances out. You know, like I said earlier, nobody's going to die from any of this. So, you know, you set your priorities where they belong, and you try to keep the balance as you go along, and you just do the best you can.
That's awesome. And so that's kind of like you're giving me a big peek into your head today, and this is kind of what I wanted. I was like, I wonder what James is like from, you know, how do you think? What goes through your mind from the time you open your eyes? And I know the infamous story about, you know, you get up between 5 and 6, I think, you have your jet fuel coffee and you answer your emails and then you start writing. But how does everything else unfold around you? I mean, are you busy? Are you busy, like, thinking about, you know, other things when you're, let's say, you kind of addressed this, but what's it like to be in your head for a day?
It's very busy and it's very tiring.
Do you crash?
What's that?
Do you crash? Do you find yourself, like, drained at the end of the day? Like, you just
I hit walls. Oh, yeah, I hit walls hard like a ton of bricks. We recently had some family down who haven't seen me for some time, and they said it's almost visible from one minute to the next when I hit that wall of, okay, now I'm tired. I'll go from, you know, bright and cheery to, oh, my God, take me to bed now and put me there and leave me there, you know. So, yeah, I do hit my wall, and I do get very tired. But, you know, there's a few reasons for that. Number one, I have a mild case of ADD, which I don't talk about, but I do cope with. So it makes my mind work constantly all the time, and I have to use coping skills to kind of chill myself down every now and then so I don't overload myself. The other thing, too, you know, is recognizing, as I said earlier, work-life balance. I can only work on projects for so long, and I have to stop, even though it's really interesting, so that I can get some downtime and stay rested. I try to make sure as much as possible that I don't reach the wall of burning out. And I do make time for things like taking a walk so that I'm not thinking about work or my projects or deadlines or stress or anything like that, you know. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I'm very fortunate in that, you know, I have a lifestyle where I don't have to work 10-hour days anymore, and things are pretty easy, so I can take stuff as it comes along. But, you know, everyone's life is pretty much the same whether you live a good lifestyle or not. You always have obligations and things that you need to do, and you balance them out as best you can.
That's true. And what tools do you use, like, to help you get through that chaotic day? I mean, is there stuff that you have to have that you cannot do without, like,
your Post-it notes. Post-it notes and a pen.
Post-it notes and a pen.
Best tool ever. I've tried all kinds of gadgets, and you know, I've finally decided to listen to the really smart consultants who say ditch the gadgets. They're not useful. They're time suckers at the end of it all. And I have to agree, there's nothing like a Post-it note to get stuff done. And the other thing I have open is Gmail all the time. Mm-hmm. It just sits open on my screen, and I reference it throughout the day, and my calendar. But that's it. I have no other tools, no other tricks, no other gadgets, no other apps, nothing.
And see, that's kind of evident, because if you look for your Twitter stream, you're like non-existent. James is not there. She might have posted about a month ago, and it might have been something like, you guys stink because there's nothing new here, so goodbye. But that was it. So, I mean, you haven't fallen into the social media trap, so to speak.
I did for a while, like everyone did. When it came out, it was new, it was fun, it was shiny, and it was a good place for me to hang out at the end of the day.
Not for business.
I, you know, it was specifically my water cooler, and it was only for between projects and between work. I didn't spend any other time on it, and I treated it like a water cooler. I was aware that this was a break and that you had to get back to work. So, you know, that was fun, and it did its time. But, you know, I have projects I want to work on. I have stuff that I want to do. I have new courses that I'm writing all the time. So I don't have the time to go and sit and chat with people as much as I wish I could.
That's,
and it'll come back. You know, that's a phase. Sometimes we're busier, sometimes we're not. So it'll come back.
Right. You sometimes you can have a few minutes at the water cooler, and then sometimes you just got to work through it.
I
know that a lot of what I do has come from social media, so I can't imagine, like, walking away from it. My posting has, like, gone down to, you know, maybe I will post once or twice a day, but that's it. But, I mean, I can't find myself walking away from it simply because I've gotten what I have gotten from there, and it's really been a benefit for me.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
But I do find that I get sucked in.
If you use it well, it is an invaluable tool, and you can build some really great connections. But it is something that you always have to monitor. Like anything in business, you have to monitor whether it's a good investment of your time. You know, like I said to myself, Twitter was really great, and I would sit on there frequently throughout the day and take my little water cooler breaks and bounce around, and I made a lot of friends. I had a lot of fans, and that was fantastic. But it didn't bring me many sales because my sales don't come from there, so it wasn't the most effective use of my time. That's when I started to scale down and realized, well, you know, if I don't spend a week on Twitter, that's okay. And if I don't spend a month, nothing much changes. And it's something you measure over time. Other people might find that, you know, if they cut out Twitter and they experiment, if they cut it out for a whole week, what happens? They might find that there are changes that happen in their business because of that. But at least they know this is an effective use of my time.
Right. And speaking of that's not where your business comes from, I mean, do you do mostly local, or are you, like, into, like, the letters of introduction that you, like, hand that mail out to people? Or how do you do your marketing?
That's a good question, because I mostly don't. I don't have to. It basically,
awesome.
You know, business comes into my lap, and I appreciate that lifestyle. It wasn't always that way. In the beginning days, I spent a lot of time every day, you know, going through job ads and responding to them and sending out emails and introducing myself and making connections. I spent a lot of time doing that, and writing blog posts, guest posting, anything that could get my business in front of other people's eyes was, you know, that was invaluable to growing my business. And I was everywhere all at once, and I got a little bit famous for that at one point in my career. And it's something I would suggest to anyone else. You know, marketing is your most important way to spend your time every day, because if you're not marketing in some way, shape, or form, then you don't have a business. You can't just sit there and expect it to come to you. Some of us are lucky. We grow our business to a point that we're recognized and people see us and they come to us naturally. But, you know, that could go away for me tomorrow. I have no idea. Maybe my lack of guest posting in the past year will affect me 6 months from now. I don't know. So marketing is something that we always have to do.
But I don't think it would be long if you, you know, if that guest posting did affect you, for sure, it wouldn't take you but, well, you know, one or two emails, you know, whatever, and then you'd be back on top again.
Pretty much.
But that whole scenario of not having to go look for work is why I want to be James when I grow up.
You can be James when you grow up. Anyone can be.
You know,
that's one of the things I like about doing these interviews, is that it's a way for me to say, I'm no different than anyone else, and anyone can do what I've done. Yes, it's a little bit harder because I was lucky enough to come online and build myself up at a time where I didn't have much competition. I think my only competition was Copyblogger, which is a really good competition to have.
I know, right.
Now it's a little bit harder. The space is crowded, but that's fine. There are still plenty of opportunities for anyone to become the type of person that I am or have the type of lifestyle that I have. And I see a lot of people that I knew a year or two ago today, you know, they're chasing my heels. And it's like, wow, I'd better pay attention to this person because they've put in the time and they've done what they need to do to become, you know, to have the lifestyle that I have. So if I can say one thing to anyone, it's that, you know, I'm no different than anybody else and anyone can have what I have.
You just have to be psycho and, I mean, have a psychological background, a psychology background.
Lots
a psychology
of coffee.
And lots of jet fuel coffee, jet black rocket fuel coffee. Well, I appreciate your time today, James. It has been super, super talking to you. And I know you're super busy too, because we're keeping you busy in the Damn Fine Words course. So people right now are can find you. They can't sign up for the Damn Fine Words course now, but they can sign up again later because you'll be posting that. You'll be opening it up again next year, right?
Yeah, I'll be opening up the Damn Fine Words writing course in February. And I know that you know, it's a little bit pricey, which is fine. It's worth every penny that goes into it.
And so I can attest to that.
Yeah, you can attest to that. You're in it. You've seen it. You know what it's like. And the good thing is that it gives people enough months to start to set a little bit of money aside. So I'd be glad to see any of your audience in there and be able to help them one-on-one as I've helped you.
I think mostly the important thing is not that, you know, that $1,600 is worth it for what we do or whatever. What's worth it is the result that we get from it. Because I know that some of my clients have really seen a difference, and I have been commented, or comments have been made to me about my work and how it's tightened up a lot since having started the course. And we're not
done yet.
No, yeah, we're not done. We're like, and I think that comment or that compliment came around the halfway mark. So we still had 10 more weeks to go at that point. So we're almost finished now, but I can't wait to see what's going to happen after we're done, because I feel good about what I've done because of the Damn Fine Words course, and I'm excited to possibly get my hands on the Damn Fine eBooks course that's coming out.
Oh, you'd have fun
with that one. When is that one opening?
We'll be opening that again in March. That's a smaller course. It's just as big a course, and it's very intense. It's usually with a smaller group of people, but I'm really proud of that course because I think it teaches people really important writing skills in general. We use the fact that you're writing an ebook just as a way to give you something tangible at the end of the course. But while we're going through the course, you're learning stuff like how to write a sexy paragraph, how to make a sentence really sound awesome, how to transition from one topic to another. So it's skills that you can apply to any type of content, similar to the Damn Fine Words course. And, you know, it started off because I was so tired of getting guest posts that rambled all over the place and that didn't make sense and that weren't pretty and they weren't tight. This course responds to that need. So you'll get tighter, better, sexy writing, and I'm really, really proud of that course.
So why did you choose the title? I just want one more question. Since I'll ask you in the forum. I was just curious why the ebook title, but we'll talk about that later. Since going to help everybody else with the work to do. But there you go, guys. I'm going to let James get back to her work because she's a very busy woman, and she was kind enough to give me her time today. And if you're listening, check out Damn Fine Words. Check out Men with Pens. Thanks, James. We'll talk again soon.
No problem, Tanya. Good to speak to you. Thanks.